Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the fourth quarter and year ended December 31st, 2012. My name is Karis, and I will be your coordinator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during the call you require operator assistance, please feel free to press star zero, and an operator will be more than happy to assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to hand the call over to your host for today, Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and Mr. James Simms, CFO. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our conference call for the fourth quarter and year ended December 31st, 2012. I'm James Simms, Chief Financial Officer, and with me here, as noted, is Patrizio Vinciarelli, our CEO. Today, we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the fourth quarter and all of 2012. This press release is available on the investor page of our website, vicorpower.com. We've also filed a Form 8-K and our amendment to our Schedule TO with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind all of you, today's conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you, various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update any of the statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay will be available beginning at midnight tonight through March 13th. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the listener passcode is 17127574. In addition, a webcast replay of the call will be available on the investor relations page of our website beginning shortly after its conclusion. I will start this evening's call with a review of our financial performance for the fourth quarter, and Patrizio will follow with comments on current performance, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor reported an after-tax loss for the fourth quarter of $4.8 million, representing a loss of $0.12 per basic share. Vicor's consolidated revenue for the fourth quarter of 2012 decreased to $50.4 million, compared to $53 million for the third quarter, representing a sequential decline of 4.8%. The fourth quarter figure compares to revenue of $58.6 million for the fourth quarter of 2011, representing a year-over-year quarterly decline of 13.9%. International revenue decreased 4.8% quarter-to-quarter and represented 50.8% of total revenue, a decline from 52.1% for the third quarter of 2012 and 53.7% for the fourth quarter of 2011. We experienced another sequential double-digit percentage increase in recognized sell-through revenue associated with shipments by our stocking distributors. The absolute figures are relatively small, but the trend continues to be positive. Consolidated gross margin declined to 39.3% compared to 43.4% for the third quarter, although a meaningful portion of the relative decline was attributable to an increase in inventory reserves, which I will describe in a moment. The other drag on gross margin percentage was the impact of reduced volume, particularly within VI Chip. Overall changes in average unit cost and average selling price were favorable sequentially, but offset by an unfavorable shift in mix. Consolidated operating expenses, as reported for the fourth quarter, increased sequentially 7.6%. The fourth quarter total included both the gain from the settlement of insurance litigation, which was approximately $2 million, and the charge of approximately $2 million for the impairment of goodwill. Financial reporting standards require that we record these unusual events as part of operations. However, since they largely offset one another, the as-reported figure approximately represents the trend in recurring operating expenses. The sequential increase in total operating expenses was driven by higher marketing and sales expenses, notably compensation, travel, and advertising, and higher research and development expenses, notably compensation and the consumption of materials and supplies. Total headcount at 1,046 as of December 31st was slightly up sequentially and year-over-year. However, there has been a shift in the makeup of our employees as we have expanded our marketing and sales team while reducing our manufacturing headcount, thereby shifting our overall compensation higher. As disclosed in our press release last week, based on our assessment of our cost structure and expected capacity requirements for the foreseeable future, we reduced headcount by 50 on February 12th, bringing our current total to 996. As we communicated in our press release of November 26, we expected at that time to break even for the fourth quarter with an expected loss associated with operations offset by the gain associated with the settlement of insurance litigation that we recorded in October. Our actual loss associated with operations was larger than forecast, and we also recorded several large non-cash charges, which I will now describe. We recorded a $1.36 million increase in inventory reserves as a charge to cost of goods sold, primarily for inventories of raw materials and components we deemed as excess and obsolete. Over three-quarters of the charge was for VI chip raw material and component inventories associated with products for which we had earlier forecast reasonable revenue during 2012 and 2013. However, due to extended delays in receipt of purchase orders and limited visibility into when we might actually consume these parts, they did not pass our mathematical excess and obsolete tests. We also recorded a $2 million impairment charge to reduce to zero the carrying value of goodwill associated with our acquisition in 1998 of Vicor Japan Company Limited, our Japanese subsidiary. Financial reporting standards require us to annually assess the carrying value of goodwill, which can be complex and very subjective undertaking. With this year's exercise, we concluded the carrying value, inclusive of goodwill, exceeded the fair market value of the subsidiary. The other significant charge for the fourth quarter was associated with the write-off of our deferred tax assets associated with state-level activity. Financial reporting standards require us to assess the carrying value of deferred tax assets based on the likelihood the company, over an extended forecast period, would be able to offset future taxable income with the deferred tax assets. While we concluded our federal level deferred tax assets were viable, we also concluded our state level deferred tax assets were not, as they have different applicability. This write-off totaled $1.5 million and is reflected in our calculation of our fourth quarter provision for income taxes. Given the assumed non-recurring nature of these charges, we have chosen not to present non-GAAP pro forma financials, as we do not believe the charges, as described above, will be recurring, are complex, or otherwise cloud investors' view of our underlying operating performance, requiring a non-GAAP pro forma presentation and the associated reconciliation to our financials. Our quarterly pre-tax loss, including interest income, foreign exchange loss, and a loss in the estimated value of our auction rate securities, was $4.3 million, a decline from the $366,000 pre-tax income earned in the third quarter. Despite the pre-tax loss for the fourth quarter, we recorded a provision for income taxes of $398,000, reflecting the reduction of the value of state-level deferred tax assets described above. Our consolidated effective tax rate for 2012 was 46.6%. It was 48.3% for the three quarters ended September 30, 2012. Please note our provision as recorded through 2012 does not reflect any benefit from federal research and development tax credits, as Congress did not renew this credit until January 13. As such, our first quarter 2013 provision for income tax will reflect the full credit that would have been recorded through 2012. For the fourth quarter, our consolidated net loss, before backing out any after-tax profit from the consolidated subsidiaries in which we hold minority interest, was $4.7 million, compared to $280,000 for the third quarter. As stated, our consolidated net loss available to Vicor shareholders, in other words, as reported after backing out the subsidiary net income, was a loss of $4.8 million. This compared to net income available to Vicor shareholders of $191,000 for the third quarter of 2012. Due to rounding, the fourth quarter loss per share on a loss per share rounds up from 11.5 cents to 12 cents. Quarterly cash flow from operations increased to $2.9 million from the prior quarter's $1.4 million, reflecting a $3 million favorable swing in net working capital based on reductions in accounts receivable and inventories. Capital expenditures for the quarter increased slightly from $2.1 million to $2.6 million, but reflected maintenance activity, not an expansion of capacity. We do not anticipate a meaningful change in our capital expenditures in the coming quarters. Cash was essentially unchanged for the quarter. Turning to the consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with day sales decreasing to 49 days, down from the third quarter's level of 51 days. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter were stable before the aforementioned increase in reserve, increasing $438,000. Reflecting the reserve, annualized inventory turn stood at 3.9, essentially unchanged from the third quarter. As of year-end, we had $84.6 million in cash and equivalents. We also hold long-term investment securities carried at an estimated fair value of $6.7 million. Included in this long-term total are auction-rate securities with a par value of 6.1, carried at a book value of 5.0, representing 81.6% of par. That concludes my prepared remarks regarding our financials. Now I'll turn the call over to Patrizio.
Thank you, Jamie. As stated in this afternoon's press release, our reported four-quarter financial performance reflects depressed bookings in the second half of 2012. While we had forecast a lower loss from operations, primarily due to anticipated weakness in VHIP with its relatively long lead times, we had not anticipated the slowness experienced by the VBU, which relies on a higher percentage of intra-quarter turns volume. Some of the overall decline can be attributed to the uncertainty of customers over the fact that defense spending fell more in the fourth quarter than any quarter-to-quarter period in four decades. Certainly, the cloud of the potential sequestration hung over the quarter, but we also experienced weakness in our industrial and transportation segments. Recessionary conditions in Europe and Japan were also a factor. Let me address recent booking trends by business unit. Total bookings in the fourth quarter declined 27% sequentially and were 22% lower than the level seen for the fourth quarter of 2011. BBU bookings uncharacteristically fell 21% due to lower orders domestically and from our Chinese distribution network, where we are transitioning to new distribution relationships to reflect our emphasis on larger OEMs and their contract manufacturers. VHIP bookings fell by two-thirds, as both supercomputing and high-end defense electronics order flow nearly stopped in the second half of 2012. Vicor, which often books orders in tandem with VHIP for certain applications, saw a similar decline, albeit on a smaller base of business. As a result, we entered 2013 with a relatively low one-year consolidated backlog of $31 million, $22 million of which was scheduled for delivery in this, the first quarter of 2013. Based on this low backlog and an anticipated partial recovery in first quarter bookings, we are expecting first quarter revenue to be sequentially lower than in the fourth quarter. including a severance charge of approximately $1.3 million, which will be recorded this month, we're also expecting first quarter net results to be sequentially lower. As Jamie highlighted, we undertook a reduction in force on February 12th based on our assessment of expected capacity requirements for the foreseeable future and our expanded cost structure, which had been established in large part to drive demand for and support increased revenue from our broad array of new products. While we anticipate this reduction in force will provide approximately $2.8 million of annualized savings in compensation and benefits, we also expect the reduction will not inhibit our ability to execute our aggressive growth plans, to which we remain committed. We do not yet have sufficient visibility into the second quarter of 2013 to comment on expected financial performance, but booking trends so far in this quarter have improved from four-quarter levels. Average daily bookings across all of our geographies have improved, and we have received some substantial orders for VH chips. As of today, VH chip first-quarter bookings, with over a month to go in the quarter, exceed total four-quarter bookings. We also expect, throughout the organization, based on customer feedback, to receive additional orders that have been postponed due to uncertainty during the second half of 2012. I cannot say this apparent partial recovery in booking activity is confirmation of our belief about the causes of our current performance, but we are encouraged by recent booking activity, which may signal that the fourth quarter represented a low point for Vicor bookings. To conclude the prepared remarks, I once again ask investors to take the same long-term perspective I have regarding our current performance. Vicor is transitioning from a strategy focused on serving relatively less cost-sensitive, low-volume, high-mix applications to more cost-sensitive, high-volume OEM applications. With the low-cost structure of new power components, we are deploying a broad product capability that leverages the flexibility of our unique power system methodology to address large, high-growth opportunities. Introduction of these new components is taking far longer than we had planned, but the strategy remains valid and our commitment to it remains strong. This concludes management's prepared remarks, and we'll now take questions from listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, press star 2. And your first question comes from live Alan Hicks with Ansley Capital Management. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm just wondering about your end markets. Military has come down. Are the other markets, new products you're addressing, how fast can we expect them to gain traction?
Well, I guess not fast enough as we like, but there is progress being made on a variety of fronts. The predicament we're in is what I think has been described in the past as the perfect storm in terms of the supercomputing applications and defense applications coming to a screeching halt, and to some extent there is an interdependency between those two. Unfortunately, new applications, particularly involving new products, have a long gestation period. So we're going to have to be, you know, patient for the long haul.
Do you see the supercomputing and military stabilizing? Any indication they're stabilizing?
I'm not sure I'm smart enough to be able to make a very dedicated guess with respect to that. Obviously, we all watch the headlines with respect to that, and time will tell.
Well, just quickly, where do you see the uptick in orders this quarter? What markets is that coming from?
Well, it's come from, it's relatively broad-based. It's, to be clear, not to the levels of past quarters, but it is a marked improvement over the depressed level activity of the fourth quarter. So it is, at least at this moment, a reversal in trend that we're taking to heart. But we'll have to, you know, wait and see with respect to where it goes from here. in the short term, we're obviously, you know, challenged by recent bookings performance and the backlog being as low as it has been at the end of the year. And hopefully we're going to see the improvement in bookings translate itself in a reversal of the revenue decline and the earnings decline starting later in the year.
Okay, thank you very much.
And your next question comes from line John Denlin with DNB Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, Patrizio. In previous conference calls, you've talked about the Intel-based server opportunity, so I'm just wondering if you can give us an update and some more color on that.
Amplify the question a little for me. I'm not sure.
You talked about an opportunity with VI chips that will get you into an Intel-based server opportunity.
Yeah.
You talked about an eight-figure opportunity.
Yeah. So that's progressing. Not surprisingly, one might say, it's taken longer than projected by the customer to come to fruition. And the volumes are not quite at the level that the customer had forecasted at one point in time. So the good news is that it's progressing along well. The bad news is that in the near term, it's not going to be as significant as we were led to believe.
So are you seeing actual production quantity deliveries to that market then or to that customer?
We are beginning to engage on that general front. So there is progress, and that's all I can say at this point.
Okay. Before you qualified it as an eight-figure opportunity, is it still an eight-figure opportunity?
It's an evolving opportunity. It is going to be significant. It is, I would say, very hard to forecast. Obviously, the early forecasts at some level of over-optimism. But it's a situation that's evolving in a positive direction, so I'm reserving judgment with respect to the long-term prospects. But it's obviously a very exciting opportunity for us.
Okay, good. Will this be able to get you into other Intel-based opportunities? Are you now at a point where you have the cost-benefit analysis where you might be able to crack some of the more commodity-type servers?
Generally speaking, yes. Again, we're going to have to be patient with respect to that. That's not going to be an overnight affair. I think that with new Picor products and new VHIP products, we're going to be able to address a much broader array of, generally speaking, lower power, more cost-sensitive, higher volume opportunities. But as we've seen with respect to the application and nameless customer you were implicitly referencing a little moment ago, these things take time to truly come to fruition. So the work is progressing, but it is not going to make a substantial difference for a few quarters.
All right, good. On your high-end servers, like I understand how the supercomputer market can be, you know, it can be very fickle, and one day it's hot, the next it's not. But are you still doing well in the high-end server market?
Yeah, I can say that we have a strong value proposition there. It's as with everything, it's obviously a complex task in that. You know, there are commodity forces at play, as with other markets, and progress may involve taking a step back before we can take a couple of steps forward. And that's as far as I can go with respect to that. But if the core of your question is, do I believe the technology has got a strong and growing proposition in that market, the answer is a definite yes. But, you know, patience is the operative word.
Right. Well, and kind of in the same line of questioning there, what I'm wondering is you had some really good success in the high-end servers, And I'm just wondering, the companies that have used your VI chips in those servers, when they come out with a next generation version of that server, are you still in those particular models?
Not necessarily, and not across the board. And that's what I was referencing a moment ago with respect to commoditization trends. So what I can say in this regard is that, you know, with large companies, there may be different constituencies with different agendas, and at different times, different considerations will prevail. So it is not going to be a uniform, constant motion in the right direction. There is going to be steps back, but we believe the overall trend is forward because our value proposition is very compelling.
Okay.
Getting more so with a new packaging and more highly integrated products leveraging third generation silicon.
Okay, so what I think I'm hearing is that you've had some setbacks, but you've got some new products and you've got a new strategy that you plan to still grow in that marketplace.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then one more question, I'll get back in the queue. You know, usually when I think of orders being down, I always like to hear about design wins. So I'm wondering, are you seeing an uptick in design wins? Are you seeing more design wins? Are you seeing them, you know, across more markets? Can you give us a little bit more color on what are you seeing as far as design wins are concerned?
So our challenge is not to be confronted with enough opportunities. Our challenge is to pick those opportunities that make the most sense. So the applicability of our power component methodology is broad enough that in all of the markets that we've cited as being strategic markets for future growth, we're seeing more and more opportunities and a very strong customer interest in getting us involved in next-generation solutions. And to a higher degree, as time progresses, we're picking and choosing those opportunities that make the most sense from a business perspective.
Okay. So, again, to make sure I understand, it sounds to me like you have plenty of opportunities. The trick is really to prioritize them and close them and go off the ones that make the most sense for Vicor.
Yeah. And you know, the challenging aspect of this, given the business model, the how much of a role leveraged technological development plays in the business model, is that because of some engineering-level uncertainty with respect to the development cycle, there is some degree of unpredictability with respect to timelines. And that's an unfortunate attribute of the model. We're getting better at it. We haven't been perfect. It is a source of frustration. But realistically, we can't, in effect, expect to have a CAG in either two. Inherent in the level of innovation that we pursue is some uncertainty in the timeline.
Okay. Okay. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that is star one to ask a question. And your next question comes from the line of Don McKenna with DB McKenna. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. I'd like to follow up on the comments you were just making about the numbers of opportunities and prioritizing them. And, you know, that's something you've talked about for a number of years. And having, you know, it's so much on your plate, it's just a matter of which ones you want to go after first. The fact that you've had that for years now, and yet we continue to see sales decline, would that be an indication that you've picked the wrong ones to go after?
I wouldn't say so. So I think that regarding the comment about the number of years, if we look at the time frame within which we put in place and expanded marketing and selling infrastructure, that's an effort that goes back in terms of its initiation to less than 2 years ago. And in terms of bringing the complement of talent on board, I would say less than that. And again, I will make the comment, Rome was not built in one day. I think we have to be realistic with respect to time frames. Generally speaking, with respect to the focus on markets and what it takes to make penetration in each of the markets that we targeted, we think we're on the right track. You know, there's been some fine-tuning, as you would expect. I can't say that everything that was originally targeted is still at the top of the list of priorities. But for the most part, we see in each of the markets that we have identified as being strategic, ranging from awareness of the spectrum automotive, which is a very long-term market opportunity, to at the other end of the spectrum, let's say, Intel sockets or other server opportunities or communications opportunities. We in all these markets and with all the products that are needed in order to support these market initiatives, we see common denominator characteristics.
Do you still see the goal that you announced probably maybe a year and a half ago of tripling sales in the 5-year time period as being achievable?
Yeah, it will not clearly at this point turn out to be achievable in that time frame in which we originally targeted that goal. But I firmly believe that we have the technology, the products, and the vision and the infrastructure in the front end of the business and back end of the business to deliver that. It's unfortunate that we're sitting in a situation where we've had setbacks with supercomputing and defense. Or the near-term outlook would be looking a lot better than it is.
What would you say your time frame is now to accomplish it?
Well, obviously we got to, first of all, reverse the revenue trend. It's been heading in the wrong direction. And, you know, as you heard me say, as you measure it from the perspective of top line or bottom line, you aren't going to be seeing that this quarter. Because, in effect, the quarter was cast in concrete based on bookings level in the fourth quarter and the third quarter prior to that, which were very depressed. But if we see a continuing positive trend in terms of the bookings rate and book-to-bill ratio, as the year progresses, we should see the inflection point from which that 3x5 realization should be measured, given where we now are.
Okay, and I have one last question for you, too, and that's if you could just kind of give us a little bit of the rationale about the stock buyback as opposed to paying out that excess cash in the form of a dividend.
Well, obviously, we're not making money. You know, we just lost a pretty substantial chunk of money, and we're going to be losing probably a little more this quarter. So in my mind, this is not the time to even think about dividends. And regarding the opportunity with the Dutch auction, simply stated, we see the stock as representing a good long-term investment, and that's why we made the offer back in November.
Okay, I'll get back in line, too. Thanks.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Alan Hicks with ANSI Capital Management. Please proceed.
Yeah, can you give an update on the issues with Syncore and progress you're making with the integrated bus converters?
So we, the litigation goes on, I don't have any significant update to make with respect to that. But I can say that we are making progress with respect to, selling larger quantities of IBCs to a growing customers list.
Okay, so your your orders are increasing in that area.
our orders are increasing in that area, but to be clear, what we've seen in the first couple of years of our effort in that space, particularly in the very early time frame, and what we're still seeing today, has been greatly impacted by Syncore's activities in the marketplace, meaning their threats to customers and to some degree misrepresentation of the goodness of their legal position.
So you think that will have to go to a final trial?
Very likely, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Welcome.
And your next question comes from the line of John Dillon with DNB Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, yes. To kind of follow up on Alan's question, in the communication market, I understand that the IBCs are being held up by Syncore's litigation, but I'm wondering, are you talking to these same companies about factorized power, and are you having any success with that?
So we, as discussed in earlier conference calls, you know, part of our strategy in entering the IBC market was to enter the IBC market and demonstrate by doing that the capability of our technology in an open frame brick platform that would enable customers not just to want to buy those products for their obvious clear superiority and differentiation, but also as a way to make clear to customers that it would make sense for them to pursue, you know, other solutions with us that involve other power component building blocks, including via chips, microchips, and so on and so forth. And we are seeing that with, you know, virtually every customer that has had an interest in IBCs. You know, we're seeing a growing interest with respect to factorized power and other via chip and power-enabled solutions. So we are still very much of the opinion that this was a very strategic choice that will have long-term value. It's been unfortunately handicapped by the interference that Syncore has played in the marketplace.
Yeah, it seems like with the 48 volts, that's a real sweet spot for you, and it's been a couple of years now. So are you seeing anyone getting close to adopting a factorized power solution or using the VI chips or the PiCore SIPs in their architecture? Are you starting to see any kind of production orders in, from that market?
Yeah, we're starting to see some production orders from that market outside of the supercomputing space.
And that's not with the IBCs, but with the VI chips and the SIPs and all?
It's with the factorized power solution that involves, in effect, a PRM building block followed by a current multiplier VTM.
That's real good news. When do you think you'll see some kind of something significant? Will we see something later this year, hopefully, in that, or is that
yeah, I think
still
talking about to some degree the same kind of opportunity that was the subject of an earlier question, an earlier answer. So, as I mentioned earlier, once again, we were confronted with a situation where the actual time frame and volumes turned out to be not as good as they once appeared to be. On the other end, there's a lot of incremental activity taking place, and we'll see how that pans out. But, you know, I'm optimistic with respect to that coming to fruition.
So it sounds like things are going, I mean, I hate to say this, but it sounds like they're going pretty well as far as activity, design wins, opportunities. It's just that it sounds like people are—they're not taking what you thought they would, and things are getting pushed back, and you have the lawsuit. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, you know, if we could ignore financial reporting, we'd be looking pretty good.
Okay. Well, no. Well, that's important because obviously, you know, we've been with you a long time because you know we believe in your strategy and your products, and that's important for us to hear that. So, to the Dutch auction for a second. from the numbers that we've seen, it looks like you're not going to get close to the amount of stock you'd like to buy. My question is if you do not get the amount of stock that you would like to buy, will you continue to buy stock on the open market after the closing of the Dutch auction?
I'm not going to speculate with respect to that. I think we made a decision late last year in November. We obviously, given changing demand and the worsening picture, we deemed appropriate to extend the expiration date. I doubt there's going to be further extensions, and we'll see where we go from here.
Well, when you say further expansions, though, you have put a number out there. Was it 20 million? And so if you don't get your 20 million, are you still going to be inclined to spend that 20 million? Or, I mean, if things are going relatively well with the exception of the financials, I mean, wouldn't it make sense for the company to continue to buy their stock? If you've already said that you're willing to spend that much, or, I mean, help me out a little. I'm just trying to understand what the logic would be.
Well, I think the logic it was, as of November, that the potential acquisition of $20 million worth of Vicor stock in the price range that we had targeted would be a good long-term investment, and that was the basis for making the offer. And then again, subsequent unfavorable developments caused us to extend the expiration date, and so here we are, and we'll see where we go from there.
Okay. One last question then on your capital additions. You went from Q2 of 1.5 to Q3 to 2 million to 2.5 in Q4. So your capital expenditures are keep going up while your bookings and revenue are going down. You would not expect to see that. Now, I heard Jamie say a lot of that was for maintenance, but it still seems like, are you building up for something? Is there something that you're expecting? Or is
At this point, we're really, we have, as I mentioned in my remarks, plenty of capacity. So capacity is not a short-term challenge. The demand creation and demand realization are the short-term challenges, and once we get a lot further along with that, then we'll start worrying about capacity again. So I'm glad that we didn't do anything premature about further capacity expansion in the time frame a year ago or earlier than that, when it appeared that we might need it. And at this point in the recent past, the investments have been made, they've been, as Jamie suggested, really, maintenance-type investments. So that's not on our capacity expansion is not on our near-term radar screen.
2.5 sounds a lot for maintenance. Is there, is this going to be a recurring thing that we're going to see? Is that about what your run rate is for maintenance on your cap now?
Frankly, I don't have in front of me the details of what went into that. It is not a huge amount given what we've had historically in terms of capital equipment. And I can't tell you whether that's a number that, might go up or down a little bit over the next few quarters, but I can't say that we should not expect to see anything major in terms of capital equipment investment taking place for a while.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And the next question comes from the line of Don McKenna, DB McKenna. Please proceed.
I wanted to ask you about the headcount reduction of 50. Is that primarily direct labor?
It's to a high degree direct labor, not exclusively. There were some other changes made, consolidation of some infrastructure to achieve greater economies, but there was a significant component of direct labor.
Okay, the beefing up that you did a couple of years ago on the sales and marketing, and bringing in some higher powered folks, their compensation is largely based on stock incentives. Have you been able to retain all those, or have they moved on? at all?
No, they are here. They are believers as I am. So I'm frankly not concerned with respect to that.
Okay. Thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions in queue.
Thank you very much. We'll be talking to you in a few months.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a wonderful day.